on a spine-tingling Sunday. And after one of the greatest shots in major championship history, Bryson DeChambeau able to save par and win the U.S. Open at Pinehurst No. 2, his second U.S. Open. The 1,000th USGA Championship had everything, including a lightning rod athlete suddenly reborn in the Carolina sun, and another broken heart for Rory McIlroy. We bring it all down over 2 hours at number two. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Golf Today on a Monday from Pinehurst No. 2. I am Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch. My friend, we have covered a lot of U.S. Opens in our time as journalists. This had the players, the stage, the backdrop, and the drama. How would you rate what you saw yesterday at Pinehurst No. 2?
I know we tend to have a recency bias whenever we talk about sport, but to me, there are probably four really dramatic U.S. Open Sundays over the last 20 years. I'm not sure anything would ever top Winged Foot in 2006 when you had Jeff Ogilvie and Colin Montgomery and Phil Mickelson adding to all of that drama. Obviously, Chambers Bay when Dustin Johnson missed that short putt 2015, the Tiger-Rocco match. But this was up there with it. I mean, it's compelling, thrilling. For Rory McIlroy, a tragic one, sort of an exhilarating one if you're Bryson DeChambeau. It just had everything on one of the best golf courses in the world.
Yeah, Tiger and Rocco, you had two players in completely different stages of life, stages of their game in terms of relevancy. You had a grand champion in Tiger. You had the everyman in Rocco. You had a Monday head-to-head duel over 18 holes. But yesterday you had, even with Bryson and Rory in separate groups, because of the intimacy of Pinehurst No. 2, Rory was well aware of what Bryson was doing. Bryson was well aware what Rory was doing.
Nowhere to hide out there.
And there was
really
nowhere to hide in the sounds and the shots that were hit and the heartbreak that Rory McIlroy underwent. Again, those are going to be lasting images in this game.
It's just a reminder that the U.S. Open is the toughest test in golf. U.S. Open Sundays are the toughest day in golf. And this game at the elite level is an exercise in having your teeth kicked in, and then you keep coming back looking for a toothbrush the next time.
No
and
doubt.
Rory McIlroy's got 31 days to regroup before the Open Championship at Royal Troon. It's a tough day for him. Today, obviously, Bryson DeChambeau's on top of the world.
And Rory's supposed to play in the Travelers this week. We'll see if he does. In case you missed any of the action from Sunday, let's take you back to the highlights. Rory McIlroy on the 18th hole at -6. This putt from 3 feet 9 inches.
Paul McGinley described as just an overread that dived to the right. But that was a painful short miss.
Three drop shots in his final four holes. Bryson DeChambeau after a drive left on 18.
The ninth fairway he missed all day long, punching it into the greenside bunker, 55 yards short of that pin.
In what is called one of the hardest, if not the most difficult shot in golf.
And he made it look routine.
Absolutely one of the greatest shots ever struck on the 72nd hole of major championship golf, and this for the win.
He had missed one of this length on 15, but rolls it in. Look how much that means.
An electric celebration for a man once again on top of the golfing world. Rounds of 67, 69, 67, and 71, enough to hold off a devastated Rory McIlroy by one shot. Bryson suddenly the game's greatest showman, ecstatic, emotional, reflective, met the media on Sunday night at Pinehurst No. 2.
I am so happy I got that shot up and down on 18. Oh, man. I didn't want to finish second again. PGA really stung. Xander played magnificent. I wanted to get this one done, especially at such a special place that means so much to me and SMU and my dad, what pain meant to him. Thousandth USGA championship. I mean, just stack them on top. That bunker shot was the shot of my life. And I'll forever be thankful that I've got longer wedges so I can hit it farther and get it out and get it up there next to the hole. I don't know what to think. It fully hasn't sunk in yet, but I just want everybody to enjoy it as well. As much as it is heartbreak for some people, I mean, you know, it was heartbreak for me at the PGA, and I really wanted this one. And I turned the corner and saw I was a couple back, and I said, nope, I'm not going to let that happen. I need to focus on figuring out how to make this happen. And I was a little lucky. Rory didn't make a couple putts that he could have coming in. And I had an amazing up and down in the last. I don't know what else to say. It's a dream come true.
The way you interact with the fans is kind of unique. Do you think we need more players like you in professional Topgolf?
I hope so. I mean, my mission is to continue to expand the game, grow the game globally and domestically, and YouTube has really helped me accomplish some of that. And consequently, I think people have seen who I am on YouTube, which has been fantastic because then I get to play off of it. The content just feeds itself out here, and they just say things that make me interact and engage. And when's the next junior club set coming out? You know, another video of the junior club set, and so I'm just able to play off of that. And it's a direct conversations to people that truly engage with what I'm doing, and it's such an awesome platform for me to show who I truly am. And so those fans out there really helped push me out there today. Even when stuff wasn't going well, like, yeah, I'm just looking on the screen back there. I had nothing there. No business even trying to go for that. But you know me, I don't play boring golf. And, you know, again, even though I hit in the bunker, the fans were still chanting my name. So inspired me to get that one up and down.
Left corner, James.
Bryson, earlier this week, you mentioned to me that since your dad has passed, you feel like you've grown a lot as a person. I'm just wondering how specifically you feel like you've grown.
I would say, first and foremost, I respect and understand people's opinions. I mean, I was knocked pretty hard down in 2022 for numerous reasons, numerous scenarios, and numerous things. And you know, I had some great friends and great people around me tell me, keep going, keep pushing. And so I dug myself out of a pretty deep hole. Golf swing wasn't doing well. Ball striking was terrible. Putting wasn't great. You know, I had Paul, who's on the Crushers, Paul, Casey, Honorbon Lahiri, and Charles Howell just continuing to push me in the right direction. And that was actually a massive help to get me in the right mind frame from such a low point in my life. People just continue to say, dude, you're good. Like, don't worry about it. You got a lot of great life to live. There's more to life than golf. So how I've grown, I've realized that there's a lot more to life than just golf. And treating others, treating yourself first and foremost, respecting yourself, is super important to being able to treat others with respect as well. And that's one of the big things that I've learned. And I'm not perfect. I'm a human. Everyone's human. And certainly those low moments have helped establish a new mind frame of who I am, what's expected, what I can do, and what I want to do in my life. And so to answer your question quite frankly, it's what have I learned? Having the right people around you.
Bryson, reflective on Sunday and joining this list of players to win multiple U.S. Opens since 2000, the greatest to ever do it, Tiger Woods, and another World Golf Hall of Fame member in Retief Goosen, and two on their way, seemingly, in Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. Eamon, what a Sunday it was. Two things really stand out to me. Bryson's place in the game was this controversial figure, and in some ways still is. He was beloved this week. He was hamming up with the cameras. He was mixing it up with the fans, seemingly able to clock in when it was time to take care of business and clock out and make eye contact with people. And also the stress that he was undoubtedly put under Moments before his tee time, the face of his driver caved in. He had to find a driver that would work. He had five fairways yesterday, but the way he fought and grinded his way to this second major championship.
Yeah, that might have been one of the great scrambling performances we're ever going to see in this game. And you can even see from Bryson's comments in the interview there, he needs to be loved. He likes being liked. It's important to him. I think it's less important than it used to be. And it used to kind of work against him. If you go back to that period of time where he was in that juvenile feud with Brooks Koepka a few years ago, and he was being trolled on social media and on the golf courses by fans as well. And I think that's the way the being a performative personality can work against you at times. And in the past, it has worked against Bryson. It doesn't this week. It certainly didn't work this week. And that's a risk he took, because if you can't invite the fans to join in all the fun on Saturday and suddenly tell them on Sunday it's business time, we don't want any of this. And he didn't do that. He rode that wave of fan support the whole way. And he's clearly comfortable doing that in a highly stressed, competitive environment in a way that he wasn't in the past. He is absolutely the most engaging personality in the game right now. There are a lot of people who absolutely love watching Bryson DeChambeau. There are a lot of people who hate Bryson DeChambeau. That's the nature of sports fandom. It's not a kind of one size fits all, and he engages people in a way that I don't think anybody else in this game does right now.
To me, it's one of the great changes in personality since George Foreman, you know, went from kind of this anti-hero to this beloved character in sports. I guess how transcendent can he be? What we saw yesterday in terms of the throaty roars, and we're living in the post-Tiger Woods era. Is this person, is this the player who has the potential to carry golf in a way that does transcend, that gets the attention of a Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl winning quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, who was tweeting about Bryson DeChambeau yesterday?
He does, because he's the first golfer I think we've ever seen whose impact extends way beyond his resume. It's not actually what he's doing on the golf course that matters as much. He's talked so much about the YouTube platform that he's built up as well, which is where so much of the future golf audience is coming from and absorbing its content from. Bryson DeChambeau is very much kind of the content creator, forward-looking brand. He's not limited by what he does on the golf course, because where he's playing now on LIV, he only has four opportunities a year where he's going to reach an audience of scale. He's making the most of it better than anybody else in the golf world right now, between a T6 at the Masters, second at the PGA, now a win at the US Open. But his reach is so far and so deep beyond golf into what the next generation of the golf audience is like. That's where I think his impact comes in.
This is also his third ever USGA title, two US Opens and a US Amateur as well. We had Hale Irwin on our set on Live From earlier, or I guess last week now, and we talked about what does it take to win a national championship, to win a US Open. And though the fairways were wide, make no mistake, this was an old school bare knuckle fight. And it says something about Bryson that his two major championships are at Wingfoot and Pinehurst number two. How about the fact that those are his major championships? What does it say about him as a fighter that he found a way, without his best stuff, to find a way to break that tape?
He's a problem solver by nature, and that includes how he actually goes about the golf swing, how he goes about his equipment, how he goes about each individual round of golf. And we saw that, and I guarantee you there are going to be old US Open purists who will go bananas that he missed nine fairways yesterday. And now one of those was a green that he drove on 13. So that actually counts as a missed fairway in terms of stats. But of the other eight greens, he played those even par. You can't find guys who win the US Open missing eight fairways and playing those eight holes even par. But Bryson managed to do that yesterday because of the very specific nature of this golf course and the native areas and the randomness. And he wasn't punished to the extent that he might have been in those areas, but he found a way, as you saw on 18, he found a way to solve problems every time a problem came up.
How about the bunker shot? I mean, that could have been left in the bunker. That could have been thinned off of Donald Ross's forehead. The statue could have landed in somebody's sweet tea on the veranda. They call it the hardest shot in golf. Our Smiley Kaufman said his ball would have been flying over the clubhouse, still going north. How about the quality of that shot in that moment?
That is the very definition of clutch golf right there, because it's the odds of him making par from where he was, and you can just see it here from 55 yards, and he gets that up to 4 feet. The odds of him getting up and down from there are just infinitesimally small under pressure. Now, Paul McGinley raised an interesting point on Live From last night. Would it have been different had he been trying to get up and down to make a playoff? Had Rory made that putt, got into the clubhouse at 6 under. And when Bryson came on the set, he said it wouldn't have changed his approach to the shot at all. He would have attempted to execute the exact same play that he did end up executing. But that was an absolute pressure shot. I don't think we're going to see a better one in golf this year.
Speaking of Rory, he walks away from a major championship as a bridesmaid once again to his highlights, or in his case, lowlights from Sunday on the tee at the par 3 15th. Whether this was the wrong club or the wrong shot, it was the first of several tough moments in this final hour.
I think it was more the wrong trajectory than anything else, Damon. Just a little bit too low. Can't quite hold that green. Rolls down into an area where just no one was getting up and down from.
Yeah, it would be a bogey. He'd caught Bryson through the 10th hole, had a two-shot lead through 13. So a drop shot at 15, and now 16, the long par 4.
Yeah, this is really, I think, where Rory's U.S. Open slipped away from him. It was that short missed putt, because that built pressure for what came after.
2 feet, 6 inches, bogey. Now on the tee at 18 with his favorite club in his hands, his driver.
A fairway a lot of guys missed all day long. He pulls this one just far enough left to give himself a problem.
Yeah, into the native area where it's always a roll of the dice, as we saw. Some good lies, some bad. This is his second.
A lot of pine straw in front of him on that one, but that was pretty poor contact. He got kind of lucky that it trundled past that bunker.
Hit a very deft chip shot, left himself 3 feet, 9 inches to stay at 6 under.
Words don't really do that one justice.
For the second year in a row, a runner-up finish for Rory McIlroy in a U.S. Open.
Here's Rory's final round. Scorecard 69, often good enough to win a U.S. Open. And the final round contender, he got it running with 4 birdies in 5 holes around the turn, but gave them back over the last 4 holes, playing those in 3 over par. And it continues a run of great U.S. Open finishes for Rory McIlroy. Takes all the way back to 2019 Pebble Beach. That is now 6 consecutive top 10 finishes. But the last 2, Damon, are the 2 most painful, 2nd and 2nd.
And Rory was requested of the media. I was part of the broadcast team for NBC. I asked to speak to him. He did not speak to me or anyone in the fourth estate. You see him with his caddy, Harry Diamond, decided to leave the premises rather quickly. The 4-time major champ, 10 years without that 5th major. And it was burnt rubber in the parking lot here at Pinehurst number 2. And I have to say, you know, the missed short putt in major championship golf, it's the ground ball through the legs in baseball. It's the missed field goal in football. It's the air ball in basketball. It is devastating. And Rory had 2 over the final 3 holes.
He did. And that's major championship pressure right there. It literally strips the bark off the tallest tree in the forest. And that's what you saw laid bare. Rory McIlroy hadn't missed a putt inside of 3 feet all season long. Almost 500 of them he's had this year on the PGA Tour. Missed 0. And he missed 2 in the last 3 holes here. And that's ultimately what major championship pressure does to people. And this one's going to hurt. I never thought anything would hurt him more than 2022 at St. Andrews in the Open Championship. But that was a slow erosion during the course of the day. The putts weren't dropping. The iron shots weren't being hit close enough. It wasn't a sudden gut punch at the end. That's what we saw yesterday. This one is going to take time. But in fairness, we mentioned Dustin Johnson earlier. He missed a putt probably of a similar length back at the 2015 Open at Chambers Bay. He came back the next year and had a pretty good U.S. Open at Oakmont.
He did, but there's something to be said that we talk about Rory trying to win a 5th major championship. It feels like Rory's trying to win a major for the first time, and the pressure continues to ratchet up. He putted beautifully all week, really putted beautifully this season, and was making the putts. He was 3 shots down with 18 holes to play, came out and made that long putt at the first, had caught Bryson through 10. Those short putts to me was pressure personified. You know, his hand off of the putter on 16, missing that slider, you know, maybe not the right line or maybe not the right speed on 18. But to me, that was pressure personified of a player who wants it so badly and has been desperately trying to find a way to do it. And yesterday was that in living color, Rory McIlroy being dashed because the pressure just got to him.
Particularly from the point on through 13 where he had a 2-stroke lead. And then he started to look very, very defensive from that point onwards, as though he was trying to crawl over the finish line. Whereas if you saw him at Quail Hollow a few weeks ago at the Wells Fargo Championship, he goes out there, he stomps on the opposition, and he just races across that finish line. You don't see that Rory Sundays at majors, because I think the pressure has grown, and it's understandable. He's going to be judged by the record he set early when he was, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old and had no fear, had no scar tissue at all. And if Rory hadn't won those major championships, we'd almost be talking about him in this kind of Phil Mickelson vein of it's another heartbreak, it's going to come. But that's not the book by which he's judged. He's judged by what he's accomplished, the same way the Tiger is always going to be judged by the young man that he was at his best, even now, as he's closer to the end. And I think Rory labours under the resume that he built early in his career. These things are hard to win. Rory keeps putting himself in the position to win, and it's something he has in common with Greg Norman. Maybe the only thing he has in common with Greg Norman is the willingness to keep coming back and having his heart broken time and time again.
He did not have the willingness to address the media yesterday, something Greg Norman did do in 1996 after blowing that six-shot lead to Sir Nick Faldo, something that Bryson DeChambeau did a month ago, losing by one shot to Xander Schauffele at the PGA at Valhalla. Your thoughts on Rory's decision to leave the premises as opposed to addressing the media about his heartbreak?
I get the fact that he's devastated and that there is the heartbreak, but I do think there is an obligation to address it. In every sport, regardless of the sport, we've seen the best athletes in the world sit there and talk their way through the horrors of having their heart broken and something that they wanted so badly falling short of it. And I think it's a bad look for Rory. He should have actually spoken to the media after. It should have given something. The flip side of that is we're only a month away from everyone in golf saying it's okay not to be okay, and that if you're in a bad place, don't make it worse. Rory McIlroy was clearly in a bad place yesterday, so it's understandable that he just wanted to slam the trunk and get out of there. I get that. I still think he had a responsibility with his place in the game and his place in this tournament to at least offer some sense of what he was going through.
I agree. He's one of the most thoughtful voices in the game, one of the biggest ambassadors in the game. I, too, was disappointed he didn't speak. I wanted to ask him about the Sunday, wanted to ask him about the putts, wanted to ask him if he got ahead of himself, and wanted to ask him, where does he go from here? Where does he go from here?
I think he does what he does before. He goes to Troon.
Yeah.
You know, and he tries again. I mean, it's not as though he's going to quit. And we have seen this in the past. You know, Tony Jackling was broken by one major championship at Muirfield in 1972.
Right.
Tom Weisskopf has told people he was never the same after that 1975 Masters. So it is possible for a career to kind of get knocked off the rails by one devastating defeat. Rory McIlroy's had a number of those right now, going all the way back to before he won a major, the 2011 Masters. But this is going to hurt a long time. The question is, how much is it going to drive him? He's not defined by golf. We just heard Bryson talk about how he's no longer defined by golf. Certainly, Rory McIlroy isn't. But this is going to be the most wounding day of Rory McIlroy's career when he looks back on yesterday. It depends how much time he needs to gather himself and try to show up and get his game ready in 30 days at Troon.
Rory McIlroy, one of the most beloved athletes in this sport, as was Arnold Palmer before him. And those two greats have much in common. Arnold Palmer, four runner-ups after his last major championship win, the same number Rory stands on right now, four runner-ups since his last major championship win. Palmer, second in back-to-back years in the U.S. Open, to Billy Casper at Olympic, to Jack at Baltusrol, and now Rory McIlroy, runner-up to Wyndham Clark and Bryson DeChambeau in back-to-back seasons. Much more to do on this Monday edition of Golf Today from Pinehurst number 2. Bryson sharing the trophy with the masses yesterday. We get the thoughts of Taylor Zarzur from SiriusXM, Carolina resident, when Golf Today returns. On Golf Today, in the gloaming in the sand hills of North Carolina, Bryson DeChambeau became a two-time U.S. Open champ, winning the 1,000th USGA championship, vanquishing Rory McIlroy in a top and tantalizing duel. A day that transcended the game, crossing over, resonating throughout the sports world and pop culture. You see that trophy, as we showed you, Bryson sharing it with the crowds, and also moving up the ranks in golf history, joining Bobby Jones, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger Woods as players to win both the U.S. Amateur and multiple United States Opens. And to help make sense of it all, Taylor Zarzer of Sirius XM PGA Tour Radio joins us now. The starter already did your show. We appreciate your time. Listen, days like yesterday are why I got into the sports business. What'd you make of what we saw Sunday here at number two?
It's remarkable, Damon and Eamon, that we are equidistant from the bunker shot and those putts on the green where we're sitting right now, 25 yards from the bunker shot, 25 yards from the green where Rory missed and where Bryson made. It's one of those days in sports that I think the fans and media covet, to have something that thrilling happen down the stretch. You don't pull for heartbreak, but you do pull for something that is thrilling. And we haven't always gotten that here, and we haven't always gotten that in major championships. Pinehurst, first of all, crushed it. I thought that it was a 10 out of 10 by Pinehurst, and they deserved it too. No disrespect to Michael Campbell or to Martin Keimer winning by 8, but you get this kind of finish at Pinehurst, this is something that everyone certainly can celebrate. And with all the junk that the three of us have been talking about in the last couple of years, it's nice that all of the interest was on the golf course on the 72nd hole of a major championship. It is the moment in golf in 2024. And since Tiger Woods won the Masters 5 years ago, it's probably the most memorable major championship.
Have you been at a major where you've seen the guy who's actually leading and who goes on to win physically engaging the fans through the actual play inside the ropes the way Bryson DeChambeau did over the last couple of days?
Nothing like it. He is the ultimate showman. He's signing autographs in the middle of his round. He is connecting to the entire crowd. It's as if, he's also running for office while he's winning a major championship. And I can tell you that afterwards, I did an interview with him for SiriusXM, and we were walking under the locker room, up the steps, down the steps, and then onto the range, and he is signing autographs out there last night. And then at Bob Dedman, the owner of Pinehurst, at his house last night near midnight, Bryson came over and is still taking pictures and signing autographs. He seems to be so fulfilled by this connection that he has to this social media community that he has created.
He didn't used to be like that, though, because there was a time where the fans kind of rode him pretty hard. Yeah. And he didn't quite deal with it in a particularly mature fashion at the time, as you would expect, given what was going on. How have you seen him change over even just the last 2-3 years?
He still has a lot of intensity to him, but I do think that he has calmed down quite a bit. And I think that injury, changes to his body, and certainly loss, losing his father, John, I think has probably given him some more perspective. The two of us talked about that last night. He's aged. He's gotten older. He's gotten wiser. And I think he realizes that there are a lot of people out here that he could do a better job connecting to. And to his credit, he's done it. Not all of us in life are able to do that. Some of us get too obsessed with little things in our life that drive us crazy and we can't overcome it. He has. I mean, to his credit. And I never thought that the three of us would be sitting here the day after Bryson won another U.S. Open, and we'd be talking about a guy that has as many fans as he does. Now, I do think that there are a lot of people that were surrounding us yesterday that were pulling for Rory McIlroy, but they were very happy for Bryson DeChambeau. I think both can be true.
One more on Bryson. Is he next for a game that's been looking for the next Tiger Woods and maybe seen Spieth have his moment and JT and obviously Rory, others as well, but because Bryson has that social media connection, that YouTube connection, that showmanship, is he the player that's going to carry the sport over the next 10 years, whether he's on a different tour or not?
It's a great question, Damon. We've always sort of had this qualifier. If Tiger Woods can't be healthy, then who can lift the sport up? And Rory McIlroy has been the answer to that. He has been the most popular player, as Tiger has called him. He's been the ambassador to the sport. For a little while, we thought maybe Ricky Fowler would be the guy that connected to all the next generation of players. And it's nothing against Scottie Scheffler. He just doesn't do a lot wrong. He's the number one player in the world, and he's not nearly as dramatic, other than getting arrested on a Friday morning for no reason in Louisville. There's not a whole lot of drama to Scottie Scheffler. There is plenty of drama to this guy right here. And that sort of reaction that you're seeing right there, that's a Ryder Cup-like reaction. You don't see players do that in the middle of competing for a major championship. You see them do it on the 72nd hole, but he's fist pumping like that and connecting with the crowd on almost a hole-by-hole basis. And so to answer your question, yes, I think that he has the best chance of lifting the sport to a newer generation. So many of us have talked about how we find that generation. Bryson, to his credit, seems to have found it.
Doesn't his impact, though, need the game to come back together? Because
without
right now, he doesn't have an audience. He's got, obviously, the next generation audience on YouTube and his own platforms and in major championships four times a year. But on a week-to-week basis, he's not out there. He's not in front of an audience of skill playing LIV Golf tournaments. So his impact is very much dependent upon where he ends up playing over the course of the next few years.
Yes, I should have finished my thought with saying that from a social media standpoint, he's done a terrific job. In these four major championships a year, he has lifted up the sport, no doubt, especially these first three in 2024. But he even said it last night, Eamon, in his press conference. He said, I hope that this helps us get closer to unification. Now, maybe in the time I've been friends with Eamon Lynch, I've found that I've become more and more cynical of a human being. And that being said, I'm a little cynical that we're going to have unification anytime soon. We might have an announcement this week that the Public Investment Fund is going to pour money into the for-profit entity in the PGA Tour, but I'm not necessarily sure that that means we're going to see Bryson DeChambeau playing in PGA Tour events. But to your credit, he needs to be on the sixth tee at Bay Hill Club and Lodge trying to drive the green again. He needs to be in 72-hole stroke play tournaments playing on the PGA Tour. I think that the masses want to see him more than just four times a year playing in major championships and the rest of the year playing in LIV events, which, by the way, he doesn't seem to be as interested in contending in those events in 2024 as he has been in majors.
He loves the big stage.
Yeah.
How about the player he vanquished yesterday in Rory McIlroy? Clearly there was a Bryson faction, there was a Rory faction in this crowd at Pinehurst number two. The missed putts on 16 and 18. You know, sports is rife, golf is rife with the devastation as much as the triumph. What did you make of what we saw yesterday?
The putt on 18 is the one that's going to get the most attention because it was on the 72nd hole. It was above the hole. I just walked over to it. They still have the same hole location right over there, but it's a downhill 3.5 footer that is outside of the hole. You have to start it outside of the hole. Now, he didn't hit it flush, but he missed it. The one on 16 is the one I think that's really going to give him some nightmares because that's outside 2 feet, and he hasn't missed one of those all year. Here's the one on 16 that we're watching right there. And then, of course, there's also the one on 18. Eamon, I thought of Doug Sanders when I saw him miss that putt on the 18th green. In the 1970 Open Championship, he had a putt even shorter than that, shorter than this one right here that we're watching right now, to beat Jack Nicklaus and win the Open. I thought of Ed Snead in the Masters, I believe in 1979, and I thought of Scott Hoke in the Masters a few years later against Nick Faldo. Those are putts that those guys were never able to overcome. Now, Phil Mickelson blew it at Marion, by my judgment, in the U.S. Open, and he won the next major championship, the Open. Dustin Johnson blew it at Chambers Bay, three-putting the 72nd hole, and he won the U.S. Open the next year. It doesn't mean that Rory McIlroy can't turn around and win more major championships, but to Eamon's point earlier, I think this one sticks with him more than all of the other disappointments he's had in the last decade.
Yeah, it's going to be a tremendous test of just how unruffled or unperturbed a personality Rory McIlroy has after. It really is a test for him, a true. One guy who hasn't caught any strays today is Patrick Cantlay, who was actually my pick. I thought he was going to win yesterday because he's a prototypical U.S. Open player. He's just plods his way around the golf course. He's very stoic, doesn't make emotional decisions, doesn't get emotional on the golf course. I thought Patrick Cantlay put himself in a terrific position in the middle of that back nine and then just kind of flatlined after that.
Yeah, it's sort of fascinating to watch him and how different he is than everyone else and the way that he connects or doesn't connect to the rest
of the world. The anti-Bryson in terms of the engagement factor.
Right, not just the players, but the fans, anyone. He seems to be in his own little lane. It's sort of fascinating that he can be so uber-focused while he's competing. I do wonder if there is something that Patrick is missing emotionally or mentally in the final rounds of these tournaments in the last couple of years, because we have not seen his best stuff. We've not been able to see him shoot in the mid-60s and distance himself from the field. Now, we did see that when he won the FedEx Cup a couple of years ago, and he became one of the hottest players in the world, and we certainly saw it in Italy last year when he was catching strays from everyone. But yes, you are correct. Patrick Cantlay finishing third is not going to be a story because of the way Bryson won and because of the way Rory lost.
It was really Patrick, to his this defense, his first time really in the maw of a major championship Sunday with a chance to win. But I want to end this conversation how we started and talk about Pinehurst number two, the USGA saying this week that venues matter. This was the fourth time that Pinehurst hosted the national championship. I thought the 150th Open was worth a major and a half. Yeah. How would you chronicle kind of where Pinehurst sits on this Monday compared to maybe last Monday?
Damon, Pinehurst Resort won the U.S. Open just as much as Bryson DeChambeau did. And Bob Dedman, Tom Pashley, Eric Kuester, everyone that's associated with this place deserves it. They have poured their heart into this place, and all of the activations that they had all over the golf course, all of the hospitality seating, the grandstands packed to capacity, they had the right amount of people here. They've thought through this for many years, and it does feel like where the U.S. Open belongs. I do think that the USGA made a wise choice in going to the same courses almost every single year and starting a rota very similar to what we've seen the RNA do with the Open Championship. And it felt massive watching this event the last few days. There's certain places where we go and we say, I'm not sure we should go back here. There are some places recently we've gone to where we've said, I'm not sure we should go back here. We're coming back here in 5 years, and I think everybody believes after watching this that we should be coming back here in 5 or 6 years to play a major championship. It is very much a part of the U.S. Open. All this discussion about what par should be and how fair of a test it was, the golf course won, this resort, this community won just as much as Bryson did.
An incredible venue. We saw heroic shots, and we saw missed putts that haunt young men grown old. Taylor, thanks so much for your time and perspective, and enjoy the rest of your Monday. We appreciate it, man.
See you guys at Troon.
See you at Troon. Rory McIlroy had his chances in the gloaming at Pinehurst number two. Missed putts on 16 and here on 18. Three bogeys in his final four holes while Bryson DeChambeau clutched down the stretch up and down from 55 yards. Difficult bunker shot to 3 feet. Makes the putt for a second U.S. Open title at Pinehurst number two, 25 years after one of his heroes, Payne Stewart, got the job done against Phil Mickelson. And there's that beautiful trophy. Bryson DeChambeau, a three-time USGA champ. Great to be joined now by Scott Langley, Senior Director of Player Relations with the United States Golf Association. Scott, good morning. Thanks for joining us. What'd you think of Sunday? Let's just start there.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. I mean, the first word I would think of is electric. I mean, what an incredible finish. So much drama coming down the stretch. I still can't believe we didn't end up in some kind of playoff as we were looking, when the guys were around 13, 14, 15. It just felt like we were trending that way. And, Bryson, I think, would be the first to say he kind of drove it all over the place, but he recovered brilliantly I feel for Rory. It's a cruel game, and one of the greatest players of certainly my generation, it was an electric afternoon.
You've been a player, Scott, and you said you feel for Rory. You were in the room while Rory was waiting to see what happened on 18. Obviously, he wasn't very conversant. We could see that from the cameras. What is it like for you? I mean, in your job, are you just going to stand there and remain quiet in the corner because it's not your job, obviously, to engage a player in a moment like that? It's kind of an awkward setting. How do you handle a situation like that where a player is just feeling absolutely devastated by what happened?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing you can say in that moment to make it any better. And so, my role in that moment is to just give him the information that he needs in the event that there is a playoff or if he has any questions about what he needs to do. And so, I've unfortunately, not been in that exact situation, but I've been in situations that are tough to swallow. That's the game of golf. There's ups and downs. And, in that moment, yeah, just be sensitive to the privacy that he needs to just, process those emotions and just be there for him.
Can you describe the tension in the room? That was you in the blue hat with the red credential around your neck. What were those moments like watching Rory, watching that television screen?
Yeah, well, I was trying my best to stay out of camera. The camera kept picking me up, and I prefer to stay out of view. But no, I mean, he's just processing the moment in real time, and I think he was just, you know, obviously waiting on pins and needles, watching Bryson play this recovery shot out of the bunker here, I'm there to, again, just give him the info he needs, but give him his space, right? It's a huge moment, and we have a lot of respect for all these guys in the field, and particularly you're in that situation. Just be there for them if they need it, but give them space if they don't. So,
you said Bryson drove it all over the place was the word you used. Was the native area sufficiently punishing for a U.S. Open? Bryson missed 9 fairways. One of them, obviously, was when he drove the green on 13 counts as a missed fairway. So excluding that, 8 fairways missed. He played those 8 holes in even par. That would sit oddly with people who are accustomed to the U.S. Opens of old, where it was much more punishing for missed fairways.
Well, yeah, I mean, yes and no. I think you look back to Wingfoot when he won in 2020, and he drove it in the rough a lot there too, but he still figured it out. He putted brilliantly. I think the natural areas here played really well, and not necessarily because they were so penal, but because they really brought to life all of the surrounds around the putting green, because as soon as you drove it in there, even if you caught a somewhat decent break, you still had that uncertainty of, you know, can I control the spin? Is it going to come out soft? Is it going to jump a little bit with this pine weed that has grown up in between these wiregrass bushes? So I felt like those areas got to a really good place. And that's Pinehurst too. There's randomness out there, but...
Scotty Scheffler said earlier in the week he thought there was a little too much chance involved with the native areas. And I guess if you're more accustomed to playing week-to-week PGA Tour golf as you did for a number of years, and the conditions have kind of been commoditized to something you expect week-to-week. But does he have a point that there was a little bit too much chance, or is that just simply the nature of playing an outdoor sport?
Yeah, I mean, outdoor sport, maybe not, but I think it's the nature of playing Pinehurst. Coming here... this is what this place is. It is not a cookie cutter U.S. Open by any means. It's just different. The fairways are wider. These areas are natural. They're much different. But I think if you ask the players, I would say by and large, they really, really love this place and appreciate the challenge and the test that it provides. I received so many good comments about the test, and it was gratifying to hear that. But I totally get your point. You know, that was something that we were mindful of, and we had a warm spring, so a lot of the other stuff kind of grew up in the spring in those areas, which I felt like got us to a place where at least there was a little less luck than there otherwise might have been.
One of the things the USGA said at the beginning of the week, I think it was John Bodenhammer, who said venues matter. This is now an anchor site. And Pinehurst had a great history before. Yesterday, Payne Stewart, Michael Campbell, Martin Keimer, Michelle Wee West. In what ways was Pinehurst number 2 elevated, if at all, this past week?
Yeah, well, I think you look back on the championship and really it was the golf course and the players that were the stars, and that's really our goal, right? We want to present the National Open in the best possible way. We want to test the players. The U.S. Open needs to be hard, but at the same time, I think the best outcome for our team is that we don't get called the media center, right? That it's really about the players and the golf course. And that's what this week was. I think the world saw Pinehurst in its most pure identity. Bouncy, firm, not too firm, but these incredible green surrounds came into play every hole. I mean, the guys were just required to be precise. That's what a U.S. Open is. It's meant to be difficult. It's meant to be challenging physically and mentally, and I think this place did it really well.
Earlier in the week, the USGA CEO Mike Wann and John Bodenhammer, chief championships officer, had mentioned the possibility of carving some form of pathway from the LIV Tour into the U.S. Open. It's not really applicable to Bryson because he was qualified for many years to come for the U.S. Open by multiple criteria. Does his victory in any way impact the discussion the USGA will have later this year about whether or not to create a pathway and what that would look like?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think we felt for quite a while now that the most sensible place to live is to acknowledge the fact that there are plenty of very, very good players that play on LIV Golf. And we certainly feel that way and recognize that. In many respects, those pathways are already there because we're open. We have qualifying. No matter where you play or where you're from, you can qualify for the U.S. Open, and we feel very strongly about that. Because we feel so strongly about it, we hold any additional exempt places under a really fine microscope. But I think the most honest answer is that we're still working through all that. You know, it's the challenge is looking at a tour that is not sanctioned by the ranking system that many of the other global tours are sanctioned by. And so how do you form an objective apples-to-apples comparison? To be honest, we're working through it, but we certainly acknowledge that there are a lot of great players on LIV, and as Mike and JB mentioned, I could certainly see that as a part of our future.
In your role as Senior Director of Player Relations, you get the gripes, you get the kudos. You're a former player. You've been inside the ropes. For a time, it seemed like there was some animosity or at least a little bit of a chill at times between the players and the USGA. I think in Jason Gore's role and yours now, that it seems to have thawed a bit. Is the relationship thriving? How would you describe your role and kind of where the modern professional player and the USGA sit in terms of a relationship?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this week was a great week with, you know, the players that played in the U.S. Open. We tried to give them the tests that they expect when they show up to the U.S. Open inside the ropes and try and make their life really good outside the ropes. And I'm grateful to be in the role that I'm in, to be able to guide some of that and to bring my perspective as a former player, what really would move the needle for me, what I think moves the needle for the guys. And so I'm hopeful that over time, you know, there's more and more appreciation of those things. And when they show up to the U.S. Open, they just really feel like it's special. I think we've never, you know, there's never been a time where we've listened more, I think, to players. And I think my role is a clear demonstration of that. The amount of stuff that I'm plugged into directly is a clear demonstration of that. And it's a privilege to do it. And I'm hopeful that over time, players really start to see the fruits of those choices and those decisions, and they just continue to feel better and better about what this all is.
We don't have to wait too long before we do it at Pinehurst. Again, just 5 years, potentially players using different conforming golf balls by the time we come back here again. At what point does the USGA begin the process of analyzing this week, figuring out what worked, what didn't work, what you would change for 5 years down the road?
I started doing it this week.
Yeah, what did you learn?
Taking notes. You learn so much as the golf course comes to you from an agronomic standpoint of you know, how it evolves, you know, what the weather is early in the week and how it comes to you by Thursday. Outside the ropes, we certainly learned a lot. I know I did, just with movement and layout and that sort of stuff. But, you know, the cool part about the anchor site strategy is we are coming back, and we can take those notes and really put them to good use in the near term.
I think Eamon's just angling for a better parking spot 5 years from now. Is that what this is about?
I may need a wheelchair spot by then, but I'm kind of our walking frame. I'm kind of on the long slide down at this point.
Tell you what, it was a magical week, Scott. I enjoyed every second. Great to be back, and thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Scott Langley, Senior Director of Player Relations with the USGA.
And here's a list of those upcoming U.S. Open venues before we get to Pinehurst back in 2029. Beginning next year at Oakmont Country Club near Pittsburgh, Shinnecock Hills, Pebble Beach, and Wingfoot. That is a murderer's row of the greatest golf courses in the United States.